Hello and welcome to the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 16th of August 2015. My name is TRP Watson and this week I'm joined by Web Cowgirl and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about A Naughty Night with Noel Coward, which is a packaging of two of Noel Coward's plays. We Were Dancing, which is part of Noel Coward's Tonight at 8:30 cycle of plays, and The Better Half, which he wrote, I think, in 1921. It's a very early play for him, because he would have only been about 21, and it is a play that was believed to have been lost. Web Cowgirl, tell me more about these plays and what you thought of them.
The entire evening took about 1 hour, and in some ways, I think this was a good thing and a real incentive to go see these plays. Both of them deal with difficulties within a marriage. We Were Dancing does it extremely farcically, and right up at the start, we walk in to a scene, I think, at a private club. And a woman runs up to a man and says, "I'm dreadfully sorry. I've fallen in love. I can't be with you anymore." And the man says, "But we're married." And she says, "Well, that's just awfully inconvenient, isn't it? But I need to introduce you to the man I've fallen in love with." And she turns around to this other gentleman and realizes that she doesn't know what his name is, which basically is the setup for about 25 minutes of utter ridiculousness. It could only be happening with really rich people who are sort of clueless, but somehow Coward and the actors managed to make the whole production believable enough, because on the face of it, it seems an impossible conceit. But Louise is the woman involved, played by Leanne Harvey, and she seems completely convinced that every bit of tosh that comes out of her mouth is actually the truth. And I think by playing it straight the way that they do, it makes it a lot easier to laugh at everything that happens. And it's difficult to think that this was meant to be anything but a good laugh. And they've jazzed up the evening a little bit by putting in two songs by Noel Coward. There's a man who plays piano before the show opens and through a bit of We Were Dancing. And then there's a little musical break afterwards. And I thought it really added to the sense of it being an evening. And I liked that a lot. It was nice, very nice to listen to. And the lyrics illustrated the romantic theme of the play we'd just seen. The other play, though, The Better Half, is fascinating. And if you like Noel Coward, I would say probably, well, gosh, it might be unmissable, because it is a Noel Coward play that was done for an evening of Grand Guignol. So, you know, I tell you this, and what are you thinking? Oh, exploding eyeballs, madness, doctors experimenting on patients. But what it actually is a little piece of psychodrama. The play has a married woman, Alice, who's played by Tracy Pickup, who has a husband, played by Stephen Fox, who she doesn't, well, I don't know if I would say she doesn't like him, but she can't stand him. And she finds him just insufferable and unbearably smug. And the first half of the play, mostly she's picking on a friend of hers who she has caught basically acting like she's fallen in love with her husband, because she's defending everything that he says. And Alice manages to find out from this woman that her little romance has actually progressed beyond the mere sort of desire. And in fact, a little bit of a something has sort of happened between her and this man. And when the husband shows up, Alice basically sits there and psychologically plays with him like a cat and a mouse. And part of it is because, you know, she doesn't like him, so she's trying to wind him up. But she's also just trying to see if she can get a certain response from him so that he could maybe be somebody that she respects. But it begins to seem like maybe she's just being awful to him because she can't stand him and she wants to play with his head and she no longer wants to be in the marriage. And this psychological game makes this actually a very interesting and I think pretty well written, very short little one act play. I very much enjoyed watching the game playing between these two. It was done in a very simple style. There was a bed that was just some boxes with a sheet thrown over it, a dressing table and a chair, almost no set at all. But it was really very easy to get pulled into what was happening on stage. So while the first half of the show, with its ludicrous farce of a love relationship, was very funny. In fact, the better half was the second half with its lovely little Guignol experience. And I think considering how short it was and how inexpensive the tickets were, it was actually rather a fun night with Noel Coward, and I would recommend it especially to people who are fans of his work or those who are interested in the 20s or generally speaking the pre-World War II era, because it does have a fair amount of glamour and it is all about, you know, rich people who are sitting there drinking champagne while they're putting on their silk gowns before they go out to dinner. And it is fun to watch. And I'd say make sure you have a nice drink with you as you walk the show. It's only 1 hour. It might even stay cold.
We're now going to talk about King Lear with Sheep, which is a performance written by Missouri Williams and also directed by Missouri Williams. And I think it's a one-man show with live sheep. The one man in question is Alistair Sexena. And I believe Gareth, the sheep are in fact TV stars.
Film stars. Film, TV, and indeed stars of adverts. Yes, I mean, I just couldn't resist the idea, really. I saw it, I think in Time Out, I saw some quirky things in the summer list, and it said King Lear with Sheep. It was at the Courtyard Theatre in Hoxton, and I thought, let's give it a punt. Well, it certainly does what it says on the can, because it is King Lear with live sheep. When you go into the bar waiting to go into the theatre, you're actually given a free programme. And that amused me greatly, because the guy who acts and the director, writer, have absolutely no biographies whatsoever, but there are biographies for all of the sheep. And their biographies range from the Disney Cinderella movie through The Apprentice on BBC to an advert with Piers Morgan, which I think must be probably the highlight of Piers Morgan's career, if not the sheep. So these are clearly very famous sheep. The actor comes on, and the conceit is that he's directing production King Lear. His cast are sheep, but they're late. So we do have a little overlong period where he's sort of talking on his own before the cast, i.e. sheep, actually come onto the stage. And they are in costume. And almost as soon as they come onto the stage, or rather into the pen, because it's a pen on the floor rather than a stage, they start doing their business. So we get some wee and we get some poo before we've even started, virtually. And what follows is just surreal, really. I mean, the actor is kind of trying to get them to act their parts in King Lear. And there is a King Lear, who I have to say looks positively resplendent in his gold paper crown and ermine cloak. And indeed, I thought looked particularly aloof, which seemed appropriate for King Lear. And there's Cordelia, who turns out to be the black sheep. And the other conceit is that Cordelia is the sort of ringleader of the rebellion that they don't want to perform in the play. And he ends up deciding, well, I'll do the Heath scene then on my own. And he does the Heath scene on his own. He takes his shirt off, does the Heath scene on his own, but then cradles Cordelia in his arms, who does actually seem to quite like it. And there's lots of buying, and it's over in about half an hour. So, you know, it's a novelty item, and it was fun while it lasted. The biggest issue with it is the sight lines really aren't very good, because they've put this pen on the floor, and then they have some rake seating, but it's not raked enough for you to see terribly well unless you're in the front row. So a lot of people are just struggling to see the sheep, which, if you're putting on a show called King Me with Sheep, seems to rather defeat the point a little bit. And certainly the people I was with, I was on the end of a row, so I was kind of a bit luckier, but the people I was with who were further along the row didn't see as much as I saw. So it's a, you know, it's a novelty item. The sheep apparently come from the Vauxhall City Farm, and as you say, they're all quite famous, and they seem to be quite enjoying themselves on the stage. But it's just a novelty item that you go to because it sounds a bit different. It did sell out the whole run, so good for them. It's just only a week, but they sold out the whole run. But they have actually put on another couple of weeks at the end of September, early October, if anyone is so disposed to go and see it.
So, Web Cowgirl, what did you think of King Lear with Sheep?
I think it was a bit of a novelty act. I think that sort of sums it up. On the other hand, Brian Blessed in King Lear was also a bit of a novelty act. And I didn't walk out of this show at the interval, as there wasn't one, but I didn't walk out after 45 minutes feeling angry about how much money I'd spent on my ticket and how little I got for it, or perhaps how overly much I got for it. It is 45 minutes of a man inside of a pen, 30 minutes of which he is there with sheep who are wearing costumes, and about 15 minutes of which are the sort of highlights of King Lear, the scene in the thunderstorm, the plucking out of Gloucester's eyes, and the death of Cordelia. After seeing Brian Blessed and another man who had to hold his script in King Lear this year, I was actually pleased to be able to get through most of it in just 15 minutes. And having the man actually hold a sheep in his lap as he spoke to her of how sad her death was, while the sheep basically thrashed around a little bit and tried to get away from him, was extremely funny and had the audience laughing. I think this play would probably be a good choice, say, if it were the Fringe Festival and you had maybe 6 plays in a day, and you wanted to have a little bit of a comic break, something that wasn't too thick. But it wasn't really the kind of thing you'd want to organize an entire night around. But given that it was only 45 minutes long, you could practically put another play in. In fact, I could have left from this play and gone up to the Gatehouse, where they are doing a Fringe Festival, and seen part of the Mammoth doubleheader they're doing. And I think that's really what I should have done, because then I could have felt like I'd actually gone to a proper play. Although I will say that sitting in a room that smelt like a barn was a theatrical first for me. And my goodness, sheep really do hold that scent in their wet and woolly fur. Frankly, I think it would have been possibly better just to have been sitting outside having a drink for the entire length of the run. But 45 minutes in, out, bing bong, off you go. And I can promise you that you will probably never see King Lear done in this fashion again.
We're now going to talk about Splendor by Abby Morgan. This is a new play at the Donmar Warehouse, directed by Robert Hasty, and stars Zari Ashton, Sinead Cusack, Michelle Fairley, and Genevieve O'Reilly. It's about a Western photojournalist who has come to take a photo portrait of the president of, well, we're not entirely sure what it is. It is probably an Eastern European country, possibly a Balkan country, possibly somewhere like Romania, but it also has echoes of places like the Philippines, or indeed Central America, some of the regimes you have there, where you have a sort of an extremely populist leader, his wife who is draped in all sorts of fancy Western clothes and has an obsession with shoes, while the people around them starve, and they have a very effective secret police and rely on a disparagement of outsiders, usually a particular region or a particular kind of people. In this case, it's the Northerners, which I couldn't help feeling that, as well as sort of the obvious parallels, sort of, as I said, Eastern Europe and Central America and the Philippines, there was also a feeling I got of he was trying to look into the potential if Britain had that kind of dictatorship, this kind of highly populist dictatorship, of course, with all the people from the north coming down to beat up on the southerners. And I did feel that there was a little bit of that in there. Anyway, Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, as you say, it's a sort of generic dictatorship, really, which is about to be overthrown, and we learn that as it goes on. And the photojournalist is there to take a photograph of the president, who hasn't arrived yet, because we're in the president's home, I guess. So she's being looked after by the president's wife, Micheline. And what happens, it's actually quite hard to describe, what happens is that the same scene is kind of played over and over again, but it changes every time it's played. So each time it's different in some way. And it becomes more different as the 95 minutes of the play actually progresses. And during it, we do sort of learn more about the nature of the relationship between Micheline and her best friend, Genevieve, who is there. You know, she's been rather put upon. Genevieve's been rather put upon by the president's wife. We also understand where this photographer stands in the conflict as time goes on as well. The underwritten role for me was Catherine, the photographer, because we don't really learn a lot about her, except that she's a photographer who's come to take a photograph for the president, really. They break the fourth wall quite a bit, and because even though the play is in English, you know that they are hypothetically changing languages, I suppose, so Catherine doesn't always understand what the others are saying, speaking in the language of this country, and the others don't always understand what Catherine is saying. So that's another structural thing that they have. The interpreter is a very, well, first of all, she's an interpreter of somewhat dubious competence. She clearly doesn't do enough English to be able to properly interpret. Therefore, we do wonder why she's there. But she's also a bit of a kleptomaniac, and she's always stealing things, and sometimes is even seen to steal things. So it's quite an odd play, really, and I'm not really sure what she's trying to do with this play. My problem with it is that I thought it was very clever, but I thought it was focusing so much on the cleverness of the structure that kind of lost me, really, because I thought, well, she's doing this at the expense of substance of the play. And I think that even though it doesn't do much, it doesn't sort of damage the characterizations, albeit the one sort of rather underwritten, it does kind of rob the play of story, because you don't really have enough story. There just isn't enough of it, really. I mean, the craftsmanship of the whole thing is wonderful, because you've got a fantastic set, and it's very well directed by Robert Hastie, as you say. And I frankly don't know how the four ladies get through it, because it must be incredibly hard to remember where you are in this play. So, you know, I felt that the four actresses were just simply fantastic, just even keeping their place. And quite how they're going to do that for the whole run is beyond me, really. But I felt the structure kind of weighed it down and was its fatal flaw in the end, clever though it is. I felt it robbed the play of story, and therefore I kind of left wanting more, I suppose. I was impressed by it, but I left thinking, yeah, but so what? So I have to confess I was disappointed for the first time at the Donmar for some time.
I went first preview, so Genevieve O'Reilly did actually forget a line and have to be prompted. And as you say, it is possibly due to the fact that going back in time and resetting the incident is very confusing. It was also confusing because I didn't quite see why they were doing it. I mean, I didn't see that they were changing the story enough each time, or whether or not we were getting a deeper analysis of what was happening. I mean, we were going slightly back, so we would get more of the backstory each time, but we weren't. I didn't think we were really getting a great deal of really interesting things out of this idea of time jumping, going back and resetting. I was, you know, slightly unsatisfied with that. There is a lot of echoes of lots of different fallen regimes, which is always fun to talk about, and it is very well executed and very well acted, I thought. But again, as like you, I was just rather disappointed by it. I just I didn't really know what they were trying to do, but I mean, it's always a treat to see these people.
I think of the actresses, Zoe Ashton is someone I don't know so well, but I actually was hugely impressed by her because I thought, you know, in addition to the complexity of the structure, she also had this really strange changes in tone and mood because of the interpretation and also because of the kleptomania. So I thought she handled it really, really well.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page at Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.